Now broadcasting in English.
Hello and welcome to Weekend Programming here on Radio Prague. I'm your host, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, we'll have part two of a special Czech life, focusing on Englishwoman Ivy Kovantová, a English war bride who's lived in Prague for more than six decades, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Then we'll follow the Buddha and, well, surprisingly, to a North Bohemian town, to Varnsdorf. And that'll be followed by another episode from our long-running series, our long-running history series from the archives. First, though, let's get started and turn to Czech life with Sarah Borůvka.
In the last episode of Czech Life, we brought you the first part of the life story of Ivy Kovantová, one of the so-called war brides, English women who got married to Czech soldiers or pilots during World War II and then followed their husbands back to their native Czechoslovakia. Today, it is time for the second part of Ivy's story, which starts with her arrival in her husband Oldřich Kovanda's home country. Ivy arrived in Prague in late 1948. When I recently visited her in her apartment in Prague's Vršovice neighborhood, she recalled her first time seeing the Czechoslovak capital.
We came in a very old plane, a war plane, and it was pouring with rain, and through the rain they were playing very beautiful music, loud, so that we could hear it coming out of the plane. And then coming to help the people out of the plane was a very good friend of my husband. And he said, "Where are you going to live?" And my husband said, "I thought we'd go to the Imperial." He said, "You can't go to the Imperial. You'll have to come home with me, and I wouldn't let you go." So we stayed there with him for 5 weeks, and my husband went off to Slovakia, because he'd been given a post in the glass industry. And there, where we were, there was a new glass factory, and they thought he would be very capable of helping there. And so we went to Slovakia. That's what I've got in the book. And I remember Carol was two, and the baby was just a baby. She wasn't one. I had her in a shopping bag. And, yes. And Cara was most interested in the people who got on the train, because they were all country people, and most of them had a goose with just the head looking out.
What struck Ivy most during her early days in Czechoslovakia, she says, was the poverty of the people and the scarcity of goods. In her memoirs titled Tapestry from Suffolk to Prague, Ivy describes what doing the shopping was like during that time.
With the increasing shortage of consumer goods, the black market was flourishing, as it did for decades. There was hardly any fruit, no towels, bed linen, or even stockings, and little in the haberdashery line, but there was no shortage of dress materials, and local dressmakers were in great demand. Shoes from the nationalized Czechoslovak Baťa factories were mostly well designed and made to last, but there was not a big choice. Kitchenware shops were badly supplied, while furniture was on display only. One did not go shopping in those days, but searching for anything on sale that might come in handy to exchange with a friend at some later date.
In addition to the strain of the post-war years that countries across Europe were affected by, Czechoslovakia had fallen under a communist regime in 1948. When Ivy moved there, many Czechoslovak citizens were emigrating. I asked Ivy if she didn't feel apprehensive about moving to a country run by communists.
I was a communist, and I still hold the views that are like similar to communists, but not communists, because that I was a communist in England already before I came. And so I could see more or less where the good parts of communism were leading, but I couldn't agree with all the imprisonments that were going on under communism. And under the name of communism, that was not for me. But that's a part that would take a long time to talk about. I'm not embarrassed to talk about it, because I still think that under the communists, if there were not a few elements that wanted to destroy the situation, then we were better off then than we are now.
Many of the Czechoslovak men who had served in the Royal Air Force and fought alongside the Allies quickly came to be seen as enemies of the state. After seizing power in February 1948, the communist regime moved to consolidate its power. Show trials, imprisonments, and executions aimed at intimidating the public dominated the 1950s. Ivy's husband also came in the crosshairs of the secret police, the STB. She recalls the moment the secret police came to their home in her memoirs.
The day my husband was arrested, I'd made his favorite lunch. He came home about noon with five strangers. I asked him whether his colleagues would like to stay for lunch. Something was wrong because he put his hand to his lips, implying that he was not allowed to speak. Nothing like this had ever happened before. I did not panic. I just felt dizzy with disbelief. So that when I was told to stay where I was, I did so, thinking that to disobey would not improve the situation. I had no idea they were secret police until they went from room to room, searching and taking every piece of correspondence and any papers they could find.
Ivy's husband was then arrested by the secret police, but thanks to a lawyer friend and pure luck, her husband did not stay in prison for very long.
He was in prison, but only for a short time. Whereas friends of ours and other people were imprisoned for, it could have been for life, or executed. But he fortunately was not. And neither did we know, or could he find out, why he and his colleagues at work, 12 of them, were put into prison and kept there but for a very short time. So we were very lucky that that happened.
In 1962, Ivy applied for work in the English section of the Czechoslovak news agency Četeka. She has fond memories of her time at the agency, even though the circumstances under which she decided to leave her workplace were sad and political.
The friendly and peaceful atmosphere on our second floor was sometimes given as an example to other departments. One November, our Czech London correspondent was sending news about a fog that had brought all traffic to a standstill. Instead of traffic jam, he reported it as traffic marmalade. Hardly a birthday passed without a party, with hundreds of tiny open sandwiches that had taken several hours to make, and a few bottles all spread out in a temporarily vacated office. But after the Soviet invasion in 1968 and the following normalization, such socializing ceased. I worked there for 16 happy years and only left because of the invasion, when the harmonious atmosphere changed to one of uncertainty, with growing suspicion of informers and secret police among our colleagues. It was never the same again.
In her book of memoirs, Ivy recalls the tumultuous days of the 1968 Soviet invasion. When Soviet troops invaded Prague, she, as many others, went to the building of Czech Radio. The radio building had drawn many Prague residents who were protesting the invasion and built barricades in front of the building. Czech Radio was broadcasting the news of the invasion, an act of rebellion against the prevalent censorship that soon would be punished when Soviet forces occupied the radio building.
Crowds of people were standing around the radio, listening intently to a speech broadcast from a balcony of the besieged building. Radio employees were dropping down lengths of string to which notes, news or messages were tied and drawn up to be read out. Further down the road stood a badly damaged bus with the undercarriage missing, windows broken, full of people sitting in silent protest, almost like a human barrier.
A decade later, during the normalization era, Ivy's husband Olcich, nicknamed Uli, suffered a fatal heart attack while on a research trip for a book he was writing. Just a year after his death, in 1978, Ivy received a letter from the German government addressed to her husband, whose father was Sudeten German. In it was a permit to live in West Germany that Uli had filed for. Such permits were granted to children of expelled Sudeten Germans at the time. While the family was bitterly disappointed that it came too late for Uli to live out his life in the country where he felt most at home, Ivy and Uli's daughter Maria was later able to settle in Germany as a citizen and not as a refugee, thanks to her late father's resident permit. Even after his death, Ivy remained in her husband's native land. Throughout her time in Czechoslovakia and later the Czech Republic, she picked up some Czech, but admits that her language skills are far from perfect. Still, she says not speaking the language fluently has not kept her from feeling at home in this country.
I thought I was Czech until the Czechs can't understand me very often. But my feelings are with the Czech people, but not the people at the top.
I wondered whether Ivy had any regrets, having lived such an adventurous, but at times difficult and sad life. She made sure to tell me that this was not the case, except for one small thing that she would do differently.
There's nothing I would do otherwise, but I would learn to drive a car. That's the only thing I would try. When I was 60, I took driving lessons, and then I saw that I would be a bigger threat to the people on the road than I was to myself, so I stopped it. But I did find it's not so difficult to drive a car as I thought it was. But it gives you, I imagine, and I think Eleanor would agree with me, it gives you an independence that you can't achieve otherwise, and therefore I regret that.
So does she, after having spent over 60 years in Prague, feel like a Czech, or is she still English at heart?
I don't do anything much the English or the Czech way, and that is what I call living your life. If everybody realized that you have to live your life and not just live, then they would be much happier and use the time. What, nothing is more distressing if you ask somebody on the street, if you know them, what are you waiting for? Well, I've just got time and I'm waiting until it's 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock or something like that. And I feel that I want to tell them you're wasting your life. You should never waste time.
You've been listening to Czech Life with Sara Borůvka, part two there, her talking with Ivy Kovantová, an English war bride who has lived in Prague for more than six decades. If you'd like to comment on her story, please do write to us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz, or you can write to our street address, Vinohradská 12120, 99 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. We're always very happy to hear from our listeners, and we think, well, you probably have some comments or questions to add to that story, so drop us a line. Now, though, we turn to Spotlight with Jan Richter, who travels to the North Bohemian town of Varnsdorf.
A town surrounded by deep pine forests, dotted with old-timbered German-style villas and occasional communist-era prefab houses. A town boasting many parks, a river, two churches, and the country's first Buddhist temple. This is Varnsdorf, a town of 16,000 in the northernmost part of the Czech Republic. only a few hundred meters from a border crossing to Germany, a 1912 two-story villa that once belonged to a local entrepreneur is the religious center of the Czech Republic's large Vietnamese community. Since January 2008, it has been the home of the Tian An Temple, the first Buddhist shrine in Central and Eastern Europe. I ask Wu Linh Ngo from the local Vietnamese community what made them establish a Buddhist shrine in their town.
My jsme už tady skoro 20 let v republice.
We've been here for nearly 20 years and we have a large community here. In Vietnam, Buddhism is a religion as well as part of our culture. So we want our future generations who will stay here in the Czech Republic to know about our own traditions, our customs. That's why our community here in northern Bohemia and the whole country put money together to establish this temple.
Wu Linh Ngo says each service is attended by 50 to 70 people who bring fresh flowers, fruit and sweets to honor Lord Buddha. The Tian An Temple in Warnsdorf has even its own Buddhist monk who leads the religious services. At the moment he's in Thailand studying, but I was in luck. Another monk from Prague paid a visit and held a small service while I was there.
Je to vždycky obřad, je to dvakrát do měsíce, prvního.
The service takes place twice a month on the 1st and 15th of the lunar month. People come here from Prague, Brno, Ostrava, from Poland and Germany. So far we've had quite a lot of people coming here.
Takže poměrně dost lidí sem chodí, no, zatím.
Today the Vietnamese community in the Czech Republic officially numbers 45,000. Young Vietnamese started coming to Czechoslovakia in the 1970s and 80s to study and to learn trades. After the fall of communism, many of them stayed in the country and took to retail business, especially in the areas bordering on Austria and Germany. And Warnsdorf is one of the community's largest centers in northern Bohemia. But it seems that on rocky ground with little soil, the universal Buddhist message of love and peace will have to struggle. I went to the local gymnasium or grammar school and ask students how they felt about living together with the Vietnamese community.
In our school, we have Vietnamese, and I think that Vietnamese is very horrible because I don't like them, because them belong a lot of pubs and red tail in our town, food shops, shops with clothes, and so on and so on. I think it's horrible because they're everywhere.
They come here because they think that they will have easiest life here, but this is not true. Good thing about it is that our people are also poor and they buy cheaper clothes from them. This is maybe why they're here, but even that I don't like them because all of those guys bring a lot of illnesses in here.
Today's world is quite cosmopolitan and it's not a problem. For example, next year I want to study in Germany so I can, because Czech Republic is in EU. Yes, and it's not a problem. The key is to meet the right people and try to make tolerance and change your mind.
Warnsdorf, once the biggest village in the Austrian Empire before it acquired a town status in 1868, was almost entirely German until after the Second World War. In 1946 and 7, ethnic Germans were expelled from Czechoslovakia and the area known as Sudetenland was resettled with Czechs and Slovaks. Soon enough, the town also became a home for a large Roma community who moved here as cheap laborers from Slovakia. But Warnsdorf has a history of religious strife. In the late 19th century, the town became a center of the old Catholic Church in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Josef Zbihlej is a historian at the local museum.
The old Catholic Church in Warnsdorf was founded in 1871. At that time, the local Catholic priests revolted against the Catholic Church and its dogma on papal infallibility. They were excommunicated, but they were lucky to secure the support of local factory owners and managed to raise enough funds to build their own church. The old Catholic Church used to be quite popular in the area, but after the expulsion, their numbers dropped to almost zero.
The The old Catholic Church of the Transfiguration of Our Lord in Varnsdorf was the biggest of its kind in Austria-Hungary and is still active today. Roland Soloch is the old Catholic priest in Varnsdorf.
Tady sever je pro duchovního i vůbec pro církve hrozně těžkým.
The north of Bohemia is difficult turf for a priest, and in fact for any church. I've been the priest here for 5 years, and I've managed to baptize some people. But I see that the way to the church and to Jesus is hard and difficult here.
K církvi, ke Kristu je fakt strašně těžká, náročná.
And how does Roland Soloch feel about a Buddhist temple functioning in the town?
Osobně pro mě nebo i pro církev je to něco, s čím se můžu smířit.
For me personally as well as for the church, it's something I can put up with. I don't mind at all. Our church is open, not only towards other Christians, but to other religions. I'm happy there is a place where people can contemplate and search for the spiritual. I wouldn't even mind if their spiritual leader came to me and we would pray together.
Kdyby od nich duchovní přišel za mnou a třeba, že bychom se i spolu modlili.
Wu Linggo, one of the founders of the Tian An Temple in Varnsdorf, says local people are interested in what's going on in their shrine, and they haven't had any problems so far.
It's been 6 months, and we've only had good experiences. People come here out of curiosity, and we show them around so that they understand what we do. We've had school classes here, even groups of adults who come because they want to see what we do, why we do it, and what Buddhism is.
The fall of communism has brought many new things to Varnsdorf the locals might not be ready for, and it might take some time to understand. But Buddhists can be patient in their prayers for awakening from the sleep of ignorance. So if you are in the area and feel like an international moment of Zen, Varnsdorf is the place to go.
That spotlight was brought to you by Jan Richter from the Bohemian town of Varnsdorf. And that brings us to our final portion of today's program, which is another episode of our long-running history series from the archives, hosted by, well, you know, come on, David Vaughan.
In the course of 1968, the Soviet Union made it increasingly clear that it disapproved strongly of the Prague Spring reforms. Yet despite mounting tensions with Moscow, the Soviet-led invasion on the night from August the 20th to the 21st, 1968, came as a huge shock. Today we are going to hear some of the broadcasts from that fateful day. I'll start with Radio Moscow, with an official Soviet version of events. Radio Moscow there, on a rather crackly recording, claiming, quite untruthfully, that Czechoslovak state officials have invited the country's allies to intervene. Broadcasts on Czechoslovak radio could not have been more different. As Soviet tanks gathered outside the radio building, reporters did their best to carry on broadcasting. Here is the radio's Jiří Dienstbier.
Ještě tady máme zprávu skupina vedoucích pracovníků ministerstva československých i zahraničních.
After calling on listeners not to risk their lives by gathering outside the radio building, he states that the foreign ministry has asked the radio to broadcast a message that the borders of Czechoslovakia have been broken illegally and against the will of the state and party, and he appeals to people not to resist the invaders.
Vysílat už nebudeme asi dlouho, protože před budovou je sovětská pěchota, která...
Jiří Dienstbier ends by warning that broadcasts will soon be forced off the air, as Soviet troops are massing in front of the building.
Pěchota, která již jistě brzy obsadí budovu československého rozhlasu.
The Czechoslovak president, Ludvík Svoboda, also recorded a message for the radio. His voice shook as he spoke.
Stalo se tak bez souhlasu
He too stressed that the occupation was being carried out against the will of the Czechoslovak government. In a tone of near despair, he said he would do all he could to ensure that foreign troops left. Radio Prague and other Czechoslovak radio stations also tried to get the message across abroad.
We appeal to all radio stations in Romania, Yugoslavia, please inform about the situation in the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic.
And the local station in České Budějovice appealed to German soldiers from the East German People's Army to turn back in the name of international workers' solidarity. But by now, there was no turning back.
David Vaughan, and From the Archives, brings us to the end of today's program. We want to thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to look us up on the internet for more news and reports and features. The address, as always, radio.cz. Also, if you've got nothing else to do, be sure to join the discussion on Facebook or Twitter. I'm Jan Willinger for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you, and bye-bye.
vous écoutez Radio Prague.